is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. On the line with us is President Lee Saunders of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME, part of the AFL-CIO. AFSCME, AFSCME.org is the website. You can tweet President Saunders at AFSCME, AFSCME. And President Saunders, welcome back to the program. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Good talking to you, Tom.
It's great having you with us. We're approaching the 50th anniversary of the 1968 sanitation workers' strike and the assassination of Martin Luther King in Memphis. Tell us what AFSCME and what you all are doing around this and the whole this I Am 2018 campaign. In fact, let's go back a little bit. What was the I Am campaign then?
Well, let me just say that we have an old saying, and you've probably heard it, that in order for you to understand where you've got to go, you've got to understand where you've come from. And 50 years ago, 1,300 brave African-American sanitation workers took on the establishment in the city of Memphis, Tennessee, because they weren't being treated as men. They were not being recognized for the work that they did, not given the respect and dignity that was due, and the city did not want to recognize their union, Local 1733 of AFSCME.
Well, hadn't they also just had two colleagues, two sanitation workers, crushed to death?
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, that anniversary was yesterday, February 1st, 1968. Two sanitation workers were crushed in the back of the truck because they got out of the inclement weather. The city refused to provide rain gear or anything like that. It was very cold, windy, and rainy. They got into the back of a truck, and the truck had faulty equipment. The equipment crushed those two sanitation workers. That really started the strike. The sanitation workers said enough was enough. We had a moment of silence in more than 70 cities across the country yesterday, just honoring those two sanitation workers, giving their lives for providing public service. And we want to continue that momentum with our program that we call I Am 2018.
So the I Am movement at that time and its relationship to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Tell us about that.
Well, Dr. King understood the connection between labor rights and human rights and civil rights and economic rights. And he watched very closely what was happening in Memphis when those sanitation workers went on strike. And they carried those placards that simply read, I am a man. And he decided that he would travel to Memphis because he believed that he needed to be involved in their struggle, in their fight. And he made that connection between those rights that I just mentioned to you. And he ultimately gave his life. Gave his life after delivering the mountaintop speech at the Mason Temple. The next day he was assassinated. So we've got to honor that moment, honor 50 years, commemorate 50 years. But we've also got to rededicate ourselves and recommit ourselves. And this just can't be a one-day commemoration, but it's got to be a call to action, a call to action where we organize and mobilize and educate our community. So we're working very, very closely with the Church of God in Christ. Their headquarters are at the Mason Temple. They were actively involved in the strike in 1968.
In Memphis.
So we are working closely with them to do just that. We want to bring this to light, commemorate, but also establish a plan and a strategy for the future where we can educate and mobilize our communities across the country.
So this is, how would you characterize the modern I Am movement? Are there specific goals that you're trying to achieve? Are there milestones that you could say, okay, when we've done this, we've gotten this far, that sort of thing?
I think we've got to remind folks that there could be no economic justice without racial justice. And the way that you get economic justice is through a strong labor movement, through our communities coming together. I think we're going to work, and I know that we're going to work with stakeholders of all kinds through the I Am 2018 program. We're working closely with the entertainment industry, good corporate actors, the faith leaders, the community groups, and more to help ensure that the power of Dr. King's message endures, because we've come a long way since 1968. But, Tom, you know this. We've got a long way to go, and we've got folks that actually want to take us back. And we can't let that happen. So that's what I Am is going to be about. We're going to be doing that through honoring what happened 50 years ago, but really educating our community so we can be prepared for not only working through April of this year, but working towards the elections of November 2018 and continuing to educate and mobilize our communities after November 2018. This has got to be a movement.
We're talking with Lee Saunders, the president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME. And the AFSCME.org, of course, is the website. President Sanders, what is the state of labor today, and what are the particular or unique challenges the labor movement is facing or are facing as a consequence of the Republican takeover of the House, Senate, and White House and Supreme Court?
We are under attack like never before. I mean, we've got a big bullseye on our backs. I mean, if you look at what's going on, excuse me, with the present administration, they're rolling back labor rights. We in the public sector, and we have 1.6 million public service members within AFSCME, are faced with a specific challenge along with our other public sector unions across the country, where the Supreme Court is going to be hearing a case in February, on February 26th, which will really determine whether we will continue to have a seat at the table and to be able to bargain collectively. That case is Janus versus AFSCME Council 31. And if, in fact, the Supreme Court rules to take away our rights and take away our freedoms, then this country will be a right-to-work country in the public sector. And we all know this. I mean, we know that the labor movement has been instrumental in improving wages and benefits and working conditions and improving the lives of workers, even outside of the union movement. But we are under attack right now, and they're trying to weaken us. And it's a power play. It's a power play, pure and simple, by those who have a lot of wealth and have a lot of power, and they want more wealth and power at the expense of those who are trying to play by the rules every single day. So we're fighting, and we're making our voices heard, and that's why this movement, IM 2018, is so important, because we're getting back to basics, and we're reconnecting, and we're rebuilding.
The existing unions in states that have, there's been a few in just in the last couple of years that have flipped to right to work for less. How are you all holding up? And is this state by state, Wisconsin, I guess, was the last state to really
Now you've actually got 28 states that are right to work, and they've done that on a state by state basis. What will happen if the Supreme Court rules the wrong way is that overnight, the next day, the entire country for the public sector workers will become right to work for less.
Right. The other 24 states just immediately get flipped. When is that case going to – have you had arguments yet?
The case will be heard February 26th, and the decision will be rendered more than likely – and we can't project a specific day – but more than likely sometime in June.
Wow. Wow, that is a very, very consequential case, and there's not much you can do to lobby the Supreme Court, is there?
Well, that is hard, but we just completed submitting the briefs supporting the position that we have and supporting the rule of law, which has been in place for more than 40 years. We are going to go back to basics, Tom, and as I said, we're going to and we have been doing this. We're talking to our members one-on-one. We're knocking on doors. We're listening to what they've got to say. We're re-engaging our members in our movement, in their movement. Yeah. And we're also bringing together our coalition partners like never before, because we know that this is going to be a fight. This is going to be a battle. We can't do it alone. We need the support of all of our friends who understand the importance of labor in this country, who understand that in fact, if we come together like never before, we can continue to move this country forward.
Amen. President Lee Saunders of AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. President Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's always great talking with you. You're doing such great work there. You're doing God's work. Thank you. We'll be back with more as the whole Nunes memo thing rolls along.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls. Did you realize that Devin Nunes was part of Trump's transition team, which is being investigated right now? And welcome back, Eric in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Eric, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, good afternoon. Funny timing. You know, President Saunders would have been a real interesting opinion for an issue that's related to the severe white privilege case I'm calling about today, but it's a municipality and county of Erie, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. that I've experienced in my decade here now. to regularly close down governmental offices for the day on days like Good Friday and New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, you know, the non-federal holiday portions. They just shut down government.
What does that have to do with white privilege?
Oh, well, that's the white privilege I'm about to tell you about. The local same courts and police department had a case recently of a DUI heroin driver not off and total my parked car, pushed the car a good 50 feet, and it's a real pedestrian area, low income. There's a Walmart a block away, so this street is regularly women and children and strollers and shopping carts, people walking, and it was lucky, I guess it was the day before Thanksgiving that kind of reduced traffic, but the finding was DUI heroin, possession of heroin and needles, and then the reckless driving, and this guy didn't spend the night in jail, Tom. Didn't, you know, no bail, no jail, nothing.
Because he was a white guy?
Yeah, white guy, blue eyes. So I called the DA's office and the local NAACP. I'm trying to get them to track the case and use it as an instrument of proof that it is, because none of the local courts, cops, or DAs can show me any comparable case of a black defendant in Erie, Pennsylvania, getting charged with any one or two of these four or five charges this white guy is facing, and then not go immediately into the local jail. So, I mean, this guy really, he ran the gamut, and they wished him a happy Thanksgiving, and he was sitting at the table 24 hours later. I, of course, wasn't. I'm 500 miles from home, so, you know, my senior citizen mother doesn't have that many Thanksgivings left, who I hadn't seen in almost a year. I couldn't go because my car was totaled up.
Yeah.
So, just really, really casual attitude about this guy from the cops and the courts. And I'm amazed. You know, heroin is like that Darth Vader word. Mm. You know, cops will, you know, they'll judge to varying degrees of harshness, you know, marijuana and then alcohol, DUI, things like that. But, you know, you introduce heroin and cops are going to get real intense with you. And also another thing I found out, the guy's got a prior DUI that I was able to find. And, you know, I'm not a private investigator, but I was able to find it as a public record. And when I went to court on it, the local ADA that, you know, came to me to ask me about, you know, hey, what do you want to see happen here? And I said something approaching justice, and you guys are charging him, says right on the court document, as a first offense. How do you get a second DUI and get treated as a first offense defendant? Mm. I mean, it's every step of the way, this guy's getting, you know, the cakiest of cakewalks for his case.
Yeah.
And by the way, Erie, PA, I can't remember the sourcing, but it was national news that Erie was voted the worst city to be black in America in very recently, a couple months ago.
Wow.
So,
Eric,
it's so pronounced.
Eric, I got a boogie, but thanks for the call and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's a fascinating story and makes a lot of sense, sadly. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Scott in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. My interpretation of this memo release by Trump, is that not an attack on FBI and all of our institutions under attack, which makes me fear for our democracy?
It clearly is. And I'm wondering, you know, Devin Nunes was part of the Trump transition. And the Trump transition team. And one of the groups that Robert Mueller is investigating right now is the Trump transition team. So I'm wondering if this is self-survival as much as it is Trump survival on the part of Nunes.
Well, I mean, at some point, are there no patriots in the Republican Party that are going to step up for our democracy? And how can they...
No.
Complain about people taking a knee on the NFL field when they can't stand up and protect our institutions. I don't understand that.
The easy way to measure that, Scott, given that global warming is something that literally no credible scientist in the world is denying, there's an absolute consensus that global warming is happening and it's being caused by fossil fuels. And yet the only political party in the world that denies global climate change is the Republican Party. So as long as, and they're doing it for one simple reason, the Koch brothers made most of their money on the fossil fuel industry. Their daddy, you know, was a fossil fuel, probably in today's money, billionaire. And they are fossil fuel billionaires, and they own the Republican Party. They're putting $400 million in the next election to get all these Republicans reelected. So as every now and then a Republican will pop up and say, hey, I believe in global warming. It's real. We need to do something about it. We've got a crisis. And typically that Republican is primaried and out. The fossil fuel, the petrobillionaires, it's not just the Koch brothers. It's, you know, ExxonMobil is very politically active. A lot of these fossil fuel and chemical companies are very politically active. Massey and Murray and the coal industry, politically active. Natural gas industry, politically active. As long as these guys are willing to sell out the whole entire world and life on Earth for the money from the fossil fuel industry, you have to assume that they'd be easily willing to sell out our country and our government. They don't give a rat's ass about democracy of the United States. They only care about where their next campaign contribution is coming from and whether there's a good job waiting for them when they leave Congress with one of the industries that, you know, that they're shilling for.
Well, our institutions have been corrupted, and I fear for our nation.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very well said, Scott. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Let's see here. Gary in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Gary, you want to talk about FISA requests?
Hey, Tom. About the initial FISA request. A day before yesterday, I believe, I heard on the Bill Press show that it was reported by Fox News, of all places, that the initial request was in 2013.
The initial request for a FISA warrant to surveil Carter Page?
Yes.
Huh.
Okay.
So that was long before, that was before Michael Steele even got the money. Or Christopher Steele, excuse me.
Oil and dealings and mineral dealings over in Russia.
Yeah. Well, my understanding, I read a piece in the New York Times, I believe it was this morning, that mentioned that the first time that Carter Page got on the FBI's radar was 2013. So we may be talking about the same thing here.
Right. And that'd blow the lid off their excuse. Now, as far as the Mueller has already talked to the head of the company that put together that dossier or arranged it for
Fusion GPS, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they already talked to the head of that.
Right.
Okay. Or Mueller did.
Right.
So while we don't know, and maybe the Democrats don't know, Mueller knows who Republican politician initiated.
Well, that's the game Nunes is playing here. The people who actually know how extensively Nunes is lying through his teeth, the people who know that have enough honor and integrity not to say it because it's top secret. And so Nunes, the game that he's playing is he's assuming that he's the only guy in the room who has no integrity, who's willing to damage the FBI, who's willing to impugn the reputation of law enforcement officials, who's willing to harm the future of this country, that and that the other people who actually want to defend the United States are going to conform with and comport with the rule of law and not challenge Nunes because they can't. So it's left to Jim Comey. I mean, Jim Comey's out there. He's no longer an employee, a federal employee. He's obviously not leaking classified information, but he is speaking out on Twitter. But that's it's a very faint voice, and it's not breaking through, certainly, in the right-wing bubble.
Okay. So, one final point on unions.
Yeah.
I've mentioned it before. Unions are not able to take campaign contributions out of dues. It has to be a separate kitty.
Yeah, you're right.
Republicans keep saying that, and they won't let go of it, and they got the public believing it. We have to push back on that because that is the cornerstone of their whole push against unions to the public.
Right, is the unions are politically active and they tend to favor Democrats. And that part is true.
Right to work.
Right, but that part is true. But the fact that your dues are supporting the union's political activity is not true. You're spot on, Gary. Thank you. Well said. Mark in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, there's nothing, you know, that the Steele dossier originally started out, my understanding, the Republicans were, a Republican was funding that, you know, opposition research on Donald Trump.
Yes, I believe it was Jeb Bush, but I don't have any evidence for that.
Democrats took it over, and this was discussed in an article by the Huff Post back in October of last year, so there's nothing, is there anything in the dossier that, I mean, can they come out and say, well, this is all false? It should be irrelevant who funded this thing.
Yeah,
if
I agree.
If you hire a private investigator and he runs across something that's so outrageous that it gets reported as a crime, then the FBI's responsibility is to take that up.
Yep. Well said, Mark. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
The Dow is down 530 points. The Republican tax cut is blowing out the bond market right now, killing it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Stan in Danville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Stan, what's on your mind today?
Oh, man, listening to you leftists is awful funny. You know, these guys, you know, they put this memo out, and all they're trying to do is protect the country from corruption in the FBI. The company, the bureau is supposed to investigate people on a above unbiased way, and it sure hasn't happened in the last couple of years. All those, you know, FISA warrants, you know, based on false information and all that, not a good thing. And we're trying to, you know, right the wrongs here.
So you're concerned that the FBI is corrupt.
Absolutely.
When did you first, Stan, how long have you been concerned that the FBI is corrupt? Has it been more than 6 months?
Information that they were corrupting, that, you know, the lies and stuff they've been putting out.
So has it been more than 6 months? Stan, as a good conservative Republican, I'm guessing that more than 6 months ago, you did not think the FBI was corrupt. Am I correct?
Oh, no, it's been longer than that. Comey needed to go the day Trump came in.
Okay, so it's been since Trump was elected you've thought the FBI was
exonerated Hillary for, you know, what would have got a normal guy in the military thrown in prison. He exonerated her. It wasn't his place to exonerate her. His job was to
Stan, I'm curious where you get your information from. Stan's not interested in talking. Screw Stan. Liz in West Hollywood, California. Hey, Liz, what's up? Nope, Liz isn't there either. Okay, let's try Gene in Pittston, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gene, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you if, from what I understand, is that the FBI, I believe it was the FBI, wiretapped Russian. They wiretapped the Russians first. And what happened
That's their
is,
job, by the way.
okay, yeah. And in the dragnet, net fell the Trump campaign. They were talking to people in the Trump campaign, and that's what attracted their attention to the connection between the Trump campaign and Russians. And it kind of like snowballed from there. Is that true? I mean, do you remember?
As far as I know, I mean, Carter Page used to do business in. Carter Page is Paul Manafort's business partner. Let's just establish the players here. Paul Manafort has been doing business in countries. That were parts of the former Soviet Union, like the Ukraine, for decades. He's deeply enmeshed. He's made millions, tens of millions of dollars in these countries, in these very, very corrupt, many of them very, very corrupt countries. And his business partner is Carter Page. So, you know, yeah, the FBI and probably the CIA as well have been paying attention to these guys for a long, long time. And according to the news reports, Carter Page specifically, I don't know the story on Paul Manafort, but he came to the attention of the FBI because of his connections, not just to Russia. You can go to Russia all day long, and they're not, you know, the FBI is not going to open a FISA warrant on you. You know, you can be a tourist to Russia. But it was because he was meeting with Russian intelligence people. And the belief was in the FBI that they were trying to turn him into basically a Russian asset or a Russian agent. And that's enough to get a FISA warrant. And that started in 2013.
Right. And the other connection, too, is at that meeting with the lawyer, Veselskaya, there was also a Russian agent. It's very shady what he did. I think his name was, it wasn't Akhmenistan. It was something, it was a Russian name.
I don't remember it either.
He was the member that was there that nobody talks about. And from what I understand, his job was sort of to create chaos in America. I actually got this from Dutch news a while back. I saw, but that was the thing that kind of blew it all out of the water when they met at that meeting in Trump Tower. But if they have to say who those members were, because if you focus on that one Russian guy, you can say, well, what the heck was he doing there?
Yeah.
I think so many ways.
Yeah, I may be wrong on this, but it seems to me that any country, when they're trying to mess in the politics of another country, are trying to do so for their own self-interest. And Russia was very unhappy with the sanctions that had been put on them.
They were not the
outcome of the whole Ukraine thing. They're very unhappy about that. They were unhappy about U.S. meddling in Ukraine before, and then they got their fingers slapped, their hands slapped around the annexation of Crimea, and then their involvement in Eastern Ukraine, their ongoing involvement in Eastern Ukraine. And so I believe that they were approaching Trump, who had, by the way, last night, Louise and I watched the Netflix series Dark Money, or we watched number six, the one called The Confidence Man, and it's all about Donald Trump. In January of 2016, Donald Trump's guy, his lawyer, was Michael Cohen, was cutting a deal with the, he had reached out literally to Putin's office, or at least that's what they said in the TV show last night, had reached out to the Russians saying, you know, we're trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. We would like some help because we're just encountering red tape. Can you help us out? That was as Donald Trump was running for president. Now, that is extremely problematic. And so you've got, you know, Trump wanting to build a multi-million or billion-dollar hotel, or excuse me, the Trump Tower.
The Trump Tower,
all that stuff.
Moscow Square,
yeah.
Right?
Condos. Yeah, exactly. You've got Trump wanting to do that. So he's looking at dollars down the road, which is all, his son on Fox News the other day said, oh, my father couldn't be discriminating against people because all he sees is green. All he cares about is money. Well, if all he cares about is money, if he doesn't care about his country, then he's still wanting to build a hotel in Moscow. And so if he's looking at his own economic self-interest, and the Russians are coming to him saying, hey, if you can help us clean up the sanctions around Ukraine and whatnot, if you can help us clean that stuff up, we'll help you facilitate the construction of your tower in Moscow. Then you've got a plausible scenario for why Donald Trump refuses to speak ill of Russia.
And didn't he just say he's not going to enforce the sanctions. He wants to lift them.
Yeah,
His son has also said we have great relations with Russia, that they figure on a lot of our accounts.
Yeah, they're big investors.
You can connect the dots.
But see, I don't think that you have to go to this chaos theory. You know, the Republicans are just trying to the Russians are just trying to sow chaos in the United States. That's kind of abstract and out there. You can just look at core self-interest, right? They want to be able to sell oil around the world. They want to be able to do business with the United States and our partners and allies. I think it's just very straightforward. It's all about
interest. I have
interest.
One more for you, Tom.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Jean.
When adoption agency is code word for Magnitsky Act.
Yes, of course.
That came from the Russians themselves.
That's what the whole thing was. Yeah, absolutely. Jean, thanks for the call. Martha in Rutherford, North Carolina. Hey, Martha, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm very concerned. I see our country turning into a country like Russia or North Korea or...
there's a big difference between those two.
Where we have dictators, and if you don't do what I want you to do or support me, I'm going to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to shut down your news organizations. And I'm not concerned about myself. I'm 71 years old, but I am truly worried about my grandchildren. my oldest grandson is getting ready to graduate from high school now. And we've always taught him to respect people and follow the rule of law. And then we have a dictator as president, and it looks like more of the country is getting on his side. And we don't know what to do. They'll probably do something to offset our votes in November, and I'm just concerned. I'm concerned for my country.
Yeah, I am too. I am very concerned.
And we don't know what to do.
Well, the thing to do is what has happened here is very straightforward, Martha. It's no, you know, we don't need wild conspiracy theories or notions of aliens coming to get us or anything. It's very straightforward. You've got a bunch of billionaires who inserted themselves into the political process back in the 1980s with the Reagan campaign and basically over a 20 or 30 year period successfully staged a coup over the Republican Party. The billionaire class has taken over the Republican Party so completely and extensively that the petrobillionaires, who are the largest of the billionaires among the active Republican billionaires, that would be the Kochs and their friends in the coal and gas and oil industry,
right.
The petrobillionaires have Republicans willing to lie about science on their behalf, willing to put our country and our world at risk on behalf of these billionaires. So you've got a Republican Party that has been completely corrupted by big money. So then, you know, stepping into that, you got Donald Trump, who himself is, you know, in all probability, basically a New York mobster. You know, he hangs out with New York mobsters. So you've got this very corrupt man who comes in, and the Republican Party is already corrupted. So they don't care if Trump is corrupt. They've been corrupted for 30 years by the petrobillionaires. So, you know, they're like, okay, cool. You know, it's the den of thieves, as it were. And so, we shouldn't be shocked when the Republicans are behaving in a fashion that's corrupt. They're all about power and money, nothing else. Go ahead.
And I guess Russia's having a field day. They're really laughing at our stupidity. Like they send these oligarchs into the United States, and the only way we know it is the Kremlin announcing.
Yeah, the Russians told us. Yeah, and it wasn't oligarchs. It was the top three spymasters, I believe.
Yes, top three spymasters.
Yeah,
right.
On the one hand. On the other hand, what they're saying is, well, you know, that's happened before. It happened with Obama. It happened with. I don't know if that's true or not. And I don't know what the significance of this is, frankly, Martha. And I'd like to know. I think we all deserve to know. But the Trump administration chose to cover up that meeting. Martha, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls right after this. And welcome back. Richard in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom, I'd like to know, what is the biggest issue in America today? I say it's the race issue. And that the Russians have put a spotlight on the race issue, and they are covering it up with this nothing burger called the dossier and quite a few other things. But the race issue to me is the most important, and it is what the Russians are exploiting, because that is where we are the weakest. Number two, the election was never won by Trump. It was given to him by the Electoral College. How many blacks are on the Electoral College? Can you tell me?
I don't know.
Okay. See, that's what I'm saying.
You'd have to do some serious digging. You'd have to get all the names of all the electors, then you'd have to go back and track them down and then figure out what their race is. But, you know, presumably they're representative of, at the very least, the states they come from. So, I would assume that there's some African Americans who were electors in the last election, probably for Hillary Clinton. And probably quite a few, actually, who were electors for Hillary Clinton. But you're right. Mm-hmm. Trump was not elected by a majority of the people in this country. And, it's not a good thing. It's not right.
And the fix has been in since the election of Obama.
Yeah.
Republicans have fixed the elections since Obama. And they have stigmatize.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Party They have stigmatized the Democratic Party to be the party of the N-word. And most white men will not speak about it, but that is what is going on. Yeah. That is what I see.
No, and that playing games with race is what the Republican Party and right-wing hate radio and Fox so-called news is all about. Very well said, Richard. I don't disagree with you at all. It's very well said. It's incredible. Let's see. Do we have time to take a caller? 49. Yeah, we've got another minute here. Charles in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Love your show.
Thank you.
My outlook takes me to the core issue here, that is that Donald Trump has 35-40% of the public with him, but he has 80-85% of the Republicans. And so, therefore, they're afraid of getting primaried. They're afraid of the Republicans turning against them. But the Republicans that are with him, Trump, they're with him for one reason only. He has said many times that if I shot somebody, they would, you know, still be with me. I can do anything I want, and I'll never lose these people. One has to ask themselves, why? Why can a guy behave in a manner so inhumane, so indecent, and yet that doesn't matter? And the only reason, I believe, is that this is white supremacy, plain and simple. This is, you know, they see the diversity coming, they see the end coming, and it's a last grasp effort to suppress the rise of diversity.
I'm not sure I see where the Nunes memo fits into that, other than maintaining a white supremacist administration, which is the Trump administration. But, you know, who knows? Anyhow, we'll be right back. Welcome back. Ted Lieu just released a statement on the Republican memo. It says, the Nunes memo omits significant material facts in an attempt to blatantly mislead the public. This is why the Democratic memo, which provides the omitted facts, must be released. So the Democrats now are saying, release our memo. They should be trending a hashtag that says release our memo, right? they really should be, but they're not. When the American people see the facts that Trump and Nunes are trying to hide, the people will be angry at the president and the Republican Party and proud of the professionals at the FBI and Department of Justice. But even with the misleading assertions in the Nunes memo, it's important to know what the memo doesn't say. The Nunes memo does not say the relevant parts of the Steele dossier are false. It doesn't say the Russian investigation would not have started but for the dossier. It doesn't say the FISA judge did not have probable cause to issue a surveillance order on Carter Page. It doesn't say that anyone at the FBI or Department of Justice violated the FISA law. And he goes on to say, you know, rather than undermining the special counsel's investigation, Mueller's investigation, the Nunes memo has done exactly the opposite. The release of this memo shows a desperate president and his enablers trying to undermine and obstruct an investigation because it is getting closer and closer to arriving at the truth of what happened in 2016. This is Congressman Ted Lieu of California. And the fact that Devin Nunes was on the Republican, the Trump transition team, says to me that that's true in you know, double, triple, whatever. Wayne in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I think we're seeing the human equivalent of a rat being cornered. And this is the reaction we're getting from the White House. But my suggestion was the Democrats should use, like today, the statement or the when they used to form public opinion for the budget shutdown, when they said that we were going to affect the safety of our military if we didn't pass this budget. They should use the same thing for the memo saying we are going to affect the safety of our CIA and FBI agents around the world if this memo comes out. And they won't have to explain any details. That might be able to form public opinion.
Well, that's essentially what they were saying. You know, grave concerns. The word grave in FBI speak and in national intelligence speak means this affects national security.
Yeah.
This is as bad as it gets. There's no word more grave than grave. And so, yeah, that was actually what they were suggesting. Wayne, thanks for the call. Chris in Forston, Georgia. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that folks haven't been talking about. I haven't heard yet with this memo. It seems to me that if the legislative branch, the Republicans say that they have oversight over the executive branch, if they have evidence to support this memo, it seems like they should be making some kind of legislative decisions or something to help, you know, reconcile the situation. But it seems like they're not doing that. They just put this out in the public court of opinion for all of us to look at. And to me, it just seems like that memo, without any justification, you know, amounts to obstruction of justice in itself. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. And I think that Mueller needs to move his investigation to Devin Nunes. This is, you know, it's clearly an attempt at aiding obstruction of justice, if not a unique effort at obstruction of justice in and of itself, on its own. I totally agree, and in fact, I predict that, you know, that's the next direction they're going. Particularly since Nunes was part of the Trump transition team, it's highly appropriate that they be talking to him, and that may well be why Nunes is doing this. He's trying to kill the investigation because they're coming after him. We don't know. But what we do know, and thank you for the call, Chris, what we do know is that when Nunes was asked if he wrote this memo in collaboration with the White House, he refused to answer the question. That should tell you everything you need to know. Dean in Los Angeles. Hey, Dean, what's up?
Well, after I actually did read the memo. I wish they did make a hashtag, release our memo now.
Yeah,
but
they should.
I really feel there's nothing more to be said than Nunes has signed his own indictment. It's just incredible.
One can hope.
It's not that there's anything there that's really that we haven't talked about over the last year, but it's what's missing in it, what's omitted from it.
Which is what the FBI said.
A Republican in it.
Yeah, which is what the FBI said. There are material, you know, that their concern was that there were substantial and material omissions from the memo, which changed its meaning or changed the meaning of the facts.
Okay.
In order to spin this thing for political purposes rather than national security purposes. And that's just horrible. That's just terrible. Dean, thanks for the call. Anthony in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Tom Coyne. I just want to give a call quick. We all know that this memo is just a distraction and just a way to de-demitize the Mueller investigation. But
yep.
if you take a look at what they're saying, right, they had this meeting with the Russians. And these are Russian spies, people. These are not the Trump campaign. These Russians are very smart people. They meet with them, and then Donald Trump will say, and his people say, oh, but we didn't get no information from them, so it can be conspiracy, it can be collusion, we got nothing from them. But a month later, Donald Trump Jr. gets an email from WikiLeaks. And in his email, after he gets that, he doesn't tell Paul Molitor and his brother-in-law, and he doesn't tell Hope Hicks, hey, guys, you know, WikiLeaks reached out to me, what do I do with this? He said, hey, look who just contacted me, WikiLeaks. So the whole thing is the Russians met with them and said, hey, you'll be getting information from us. It will be getting to you through WikiLeaks. You get the information, and then you release it. So this whole idea that they got nothing out of this meeting is ridiculous. The government of the Russians told them, we will give you the information through WikiLeaks. It happened 3 or 4 weeks later. Read the emails, people. Nobody's surprised that WikiLeaks contacted them. Nobody's surprised that WikiLeaks is helping them.
Yeah.
He's talking to them like, hey, we got the information we needed. What do we do with it now?
Yeah.
So this whole idea that they think that there's no collusion, and the word is not collusion. The word is conspiracy. There was a conspiracy to taint the election. And this idea that people keep going on TV, on CNN and MSNBC, and pretending like not one vote was changed. If I am given false information by a foreign government to make my decision to vote, people's votes were changed. So
yeah.
It is not a good election.
Yeah. You mean when you say people's votes were changed, Anthony, are you talking about voting machines being hacked?
No, what I'm talking about, Tom, is if me and you are friends, and we're good friends, and we trust each other, and then I'm texting you and telling you, hey, man, don't vote for Hillary Clinton because she did this, this, and this, and you think that information is coming from your good friend, trusted friend, but it's really coming from the Russian government.
Oh, the trolls and the bots and things. Yeah, okay, I got it. Right, Anthony, I'm sorry. We're out of time. We're out of show. But, wow, what a week. We'll be back on Monday with more. Stay awake, hey? We've got big stakes here. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, and get all your friends out there and active. Get them all registered to vote. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.